Imagine knowing exactly what your students are learning and exactly which steps you need to take next.
Join us in Download the Reading Quiz to craft meaningful and productive formative assessments that move away from gotcha moments of basic recall and toward assessing what your students actually can do.
In this 30-minute free masterclass, we'll share three powerful assessment keys that work for any novel at any time of the year.
Head to shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to sign up, and we'll also send you a free workbook to keep track of all your notes.
Once again, that's shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to nail formative assessments forever. Well, hello, and welcome back to Brave New Teaching. I am Amanda, one of your co-hosts of this fabulous podcast. My co-host Marie will be joining us very soon in our next interview of a summer-long series that we're calling Camp BNT. At camp, we've been hard at work looking at different ways to approach our classrooms for the upcoming school year and pretty much all school year round in a way that honors culturally responsive teaching, new methodologies, and really broadening our lens to understand the ways in which we can serve our students and our communities in ways differently than we've done before. That's what we've been working on really hard. And we've been focusing our energy on interviewing authors from both the fiction side of the world and the professional development side of the world. And so for today's episode, we are sitting down with the incredible and newly minted author, Dr. Deanna Smith. Deanna has been on the podcast with us before. She is a social media activist. She works incredibly hard through her social media to bring awareness to issues of equity in education, culturally responsive teaching. And she's been doing all that work as a teacher, as an administrator, and on the consultant side of the education world and doing her work that way. Now we get to hear her do her work and read her work in her first book. The book is called Rooted in Joy, and we are thrilled to be on the front end of helping her get the word out about this book and sharing it as it's freshly being printed and shared with the world. Guys, we couldn't even get an advanced copy of this book. It has been so hard to get. We had to look through the PDF version, and man, were we just overwhelmed and impressed with what she's up to. We are going to walk through various components of her work, but also the practical side. What does this look like in your classroom? Dr. Smith has worked, like I said, in not only the education space, but on her own doctoral education. Deanna began working with teachers and administrators who are ready to begin their work of reimagining what's possible in schools. All of this passion and dedication in her life was born from experience. It's continually fueled by injustice that she sees in education, and her work at the Loyola Marymount University in educational leadership for social justice has evolved not only into her doctoral degree, but into this book. And so during this interview, we want to make sure that you have gotten your workbook. All of the workbooks are available in Camp BNT. So make sure that you head to bravenewteaching.com/camp. Inside of camp, you can grab, like I said, the workbook for this episode. And you're going to want to listen, pay attention, and take notes as much as you can so that this work will inform you in the moment that you're listening, as well as all throughout the school year as you're feeling pushed and pulled in a million different directions. This workbook can center you in a way that you really need to be brought back to your love and focus and the desire that, you know, we know why you're here. You're here because you want to do this work right alongside Dr. Smith and the rest of the Brave New Teaching community. So thank you, Dr. Smith, for coming back. We are so happy to have had you now twice. We can't wait for another conversation in the near future. And ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, enjoy the show.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, and we are so much more than a podcast.
We give teachers the inspiration, support, and tools to challenge the status quo.
I'm Amanda, and I'm a former English teacher from Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm a teacher from Southern California.
Join us at bravenewteaching.com to find out more about our courses, festivals, and get every episode's show notes.
We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show. All right, Brave New Teaching Community, we are very excited to welcome back Dr. Deanna Smith. I like to say your full title because I feel like it's just like you got your doctorate. We are calling you Dr. Deanna Smith. Welcome back to Brave New Teaching.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. It's so awesome to be chatting with you all again. And especially in this part of my journey, I'm really excited to chat today.
We are very excited to hear about, well, first of all, we just want to hear everything you have to say all the time, but also to hear, like, before we started recording, everybody, listeners, we were talking about the mind trip that is putting your writing into print, like sending it into print and out into the world and like final edits done, closed, push the big, I assume it's like a big book-shaped red button, just like, and then it all, like,
I wish it out of the world. So fun.
Yeah, right? I know, wouldn't that be satisfying?
It was just a send on an email, unfortunately. It was kind of like lackluster, but it was still good.
And then you go, yee! But how different that is from academic writing and from just the world, you know, classroom world as we know it. We teach everything as a process. Yes. Drafting, revising, editing, and then drafting again, and then revising, and then blah, 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 blah. And so it's got to be so different. But Amanda, I haven't even let you get a word in edgewise. Hi.
Hi, I'm here too. I'm so excited to talk with Deanna. And I'm curious because it's been, you know, when you were here with us, Deanna, it was kind of a back to school resetting, you know, our mindset about classroom culture. And I know that that's super connected to the book, but we'd just love to hear what you've been up to this past school year and in your life. What have you been up to since we talked to you last?
Yeah, so it was such a crazy ride just coming back, you know, from COVID and being inside the school building and like a post-COVID environment COVID environment was very surreal, very much a whirlwind. And I ended up, and I don't think I talked too much about this, but I was at that point, I was in a vice principal role and I wasn't really aligned like ideologically with the choices that my school was making for our students in that environment. I was definitely really pushing for, you know, more humanizing practices. And long story short, I ended up stepping down from my vice principal role and really focusing on working with teachers and teacher coaching as opposed to school leading, which like when you become a school leader, you think that you're going to be working with a lot of teachers, but really it ends up being like a lot of really boring meetings and like the district just like bossing you around all the time. So I went into it teacher coaching instead. And so I've been really working on teacher coaching. And then of course, you know, my consulting business and writing a book. That's really the main thing. Like,
wow, every weekend yeah.
for the last year, I've been writing a book. So that's the main thing I've been doing.
That is so cool. And we are very excited to hear all about it. Well, we're going to get into more of the book in just a minute. But I do wonder when you say you've been writing for the past year, but really, when did the book itself start?
The book itself really started. I mean, I think you always hope to have the opportunity to tell the beautiful stories of the like kids and coworkers that have touched your lives. And, you know, my first year teaching, when I first started as a fifth grade teacher in Oakland, California, I like knew that the world needed to know what was going on at this school. It was a really magical school with really magical kids, but I never thought I'd have the opportunity. But one thing that I did do is I've always kept in contact with like those first students from my first year teaching ever. Uh-huh. I've always written down stories. I have hundreds of pictures still. So I think in my mind, it wasn't going to be like a book. It was just going to be memories for me. So the book really started the second I walked into the classroom, but then it started to become like a real thing. You know, you do a dissertation, right? As part of your doctoral process. So I did that, which is kind of like a book, but not nearly anything this scale. So it's been a long process, but a journey that has just felt really natural.
That's really cool. Oh, I'm excited. Okay, well, following up on more things like books, I think we may have talked about this last time. I'm not sure if we did or not, but we like to talk a lot about First Chapter Friday, and we've been in this series of authors that we are talking to over the course of this summer. We are asking them to kind of put their spin on First Chapter Friday. And since your book is not a fiction, which is generally what is used for First Chapter Friday, I was wondering if you were to have your own classroom again, whatever grade level, let's say it's fifth grade, what is something that you would include in one of your first titles for a First Chapter Friday passage?
Oh, like a book for a read aloud?
Yeah,
maybe?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's like picking between my children. There's so many good ones.
I know, right? It's hard.
I love to read, you know, actually the first book I ever did a read aloud to was Esperanza Rising. So that one always has a special place in my heart. I love that one. I loved reading The One and Only Ivan. Yes. Cause I really think it's a great story about empathy. I love anything like The Crossover. All of those books are great. Brown Girl Dreaming is another one that has like a really soft spot in my heart. So any of those are fun. But then, you know, I've also done the like the high interest books, you know, like your Hunger Games, Harry Potter. Totally. So I think it for me, like I love to share books that I can connect with and that my students can connect with. So I'm always going to do something like a House on Mango Street, Esperanza Rising, Brown Girl Dreaming, something like that, because that is just so transformative to be able to like see yourself through the characters with your kids at the same time. And it's just incredibly healing as well. So I always got to pick something like that probably.
I love that.
This is why we love fiction.
Yeah.
That spoiler alert, that's my next dream project. I really want to write a picture book and I already have like the concept and everything. I'm just waiting for the opportunity.
That's awesome.
Well, we'll have you back for that one too.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be back for
can we be part of the next book launch? Yes, let's do it. Yes.
Okay, so let's circle back to the book because I wrote this. I was talking to Marie last night and I go, I really want to ask Deanna about the title of her book, because I can imagine like the paralysis, the decision paralysis of committing to a title. I love the title, but I'm curious about like the experience, like why you picked that title and what does Rooted in Joy mean to you?
Yeah, the title was probably the hardest part because I mean, so you have, there's a couple of like concerns from the publisher that they're thinking about like marketing and how they want to sell it. Those things didn't really occur to me. You know, I wasn't really thinking about any of that at the time. But I knew that I wanted something like, I was like, it has to have like joy or like liberation or like life. Like the title has to feel like alive in some way, because when, as somebody who like, I was like wrist deep, y'all know, like in the equity work, especially when it was really crescendoing in like 2020, 2021, I just felt like one thing that we weren't talking about was like the liberatory power of joy. And like, I think that like rest and joy is resistance, and like resistance to struggle doesn't always have to look like struggle. So I wanted something that captured that spirit. And then I talk about this a little bit in the book. It also came from like just feeling like school and schooling has so much shifted away from this idea of like joy and like childhood and childlike wonder and just excitement. And I wanted something that really encapsulated that. And I knew that that had to be the foundation. Because I think when people like hear what the book is about, they're maybe not expecting like how much I'm going to be talking about joy and fun and like exciting things. Cause I think they're thinking, oh, this is an equity book. It's going to be like, you know, just talking about all of the things that are going wrong. And right. It's really a lot about classroom cultures. And I'm thinking people are going to think that I'm going to give them all these like really strict, aggressive tactics, like to bring down the hammer and whip these kids into shape. And so I really wanted to juxtapose that by like making sure that people know, like, no, we're building classrooms that are rooted in joy first. And then we're talking about building a classroom culture for that. So we struggled. I workshopped. I talked to actually a lot of my teacher friends. I had like an unofficial focus group with my teacher friends. And then also, you know, we talked about I get that some schools are scared about having like equity or inclusion, or those words are actually even banned in school districts. But it was important to me from an integrity point. I was like, I'm not going to let them silence me. Like there's going to be something about that. Even if it's just in the subtitle, like I'm not going to let them take that word away from me just to be able to sell the book. So it was kind of a back and forth with the publisher a little bit, but I think like what was really cool for me was that I think the title encapsulates the spirit of the book and just like the spirit of the work that I want to do. So when we landed on it, it was like, you know, when you meet your significant other, when we heard we'd enjoy, I was like, oh, I know, that's it. That's good. We're good. Like, wrap it up. No more discussion. That's the title.
That's great.
So there was not really a decision paralysis. It was like workshopped until it was the meet cute. This was the magical moment.
Meet cute. Yeah, I had a meet cute with the title. Yes. Yeah. I mean, there was like I said, it was just tricky because like you know, schools are in such a weird, like I'm in LA, yeah. So I'm just hearing about what's going on. I'm not experiencing it necessarily firsthand. So schools are in such a weird place. So you do have to be careful. But, and then, you know, I knew really that I was going to go with my gut, regardless of what the publisher, what schools had to say, honestly. So.
Well, and it sounds like, and we're going to hear more, even more about really like the crux of what the book is about and who it's for. But like, it sounds like omitting words that are political buzzwords, right? Have been politicized, mm-hmm. would be untrue to you and untrue to your work and to your mission. So like, you got to be yourself. And that's, yeah. And you know, again, we're educators. So like the business bottom line is kind of foreign to us.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, yeah, exactly. Like just,
way over my head. Okay.
I would not have thought of that either. I would have just gone, well, no, that's what it is. Why would I call it something different?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. But it was, I owe so much to my other teacher friends too, because I had asked them, I was like, you know, I want it to be something that you pick up, that you're excited about, you know, not the book that you get, you know, when they give you a book at the beginning of the year, like for your PD book from your district, I don't want people to get it and be like, oh, you know, rolling their eyes. Like, I'm not trying to read this. I wanted it to be something that they would be excited to pick up. And that went into the cover too. I don't know if you've got a chance to see the cover, but it's very colorful. There's like orange, which I was really excited about. Like, I was like, I want this to be like a book that teachers are excited to have on their shelves. Obviously, I'm big into displaying my books on my shelves. So I wanted them to be excited about that.
Yeah. Listeners, behind her is this huge, like, it looks like it comes around the corner too. Shelves, yeah, just full of around. Books.
It goes this beautiful. Way and this way. Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful. Well, okay. I want to get a little bit more into your book itself, what it's about, and especially like how and when you recognized a need for what you have created. Like, when did you recognize that? Where, how, and then how did you decide, like, I'm going to do it? It's coming from me.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, when did I first start to figure out that it was necessary? I think all the way back in my credentialing program, and I did an emergency credentialing program. So kind of like Teach for America. It wasn't that, but it was very similar. So, and you know, and I own that, like, I give so much respect to people that studied education because I know that I was underprepared and I know that I was part of perpetuating that kind of harmful system. And that's why I took it so seriously to try to learn more and be better. Because when I finished that program, they were like, all right, off you go. And I was kind of like, no, like, I'm not ready. Like,
yeah,
I'm
not, please no. Yeah.
I'm not good right now. So I knew that there had to be like more training out there. So that's really kind of what got me into the idea of continuing my education, continuing to be a lifelong learner. And then specifically, like, it was kind of the marriage of two things. So one thing that I've always done, even from jump, was been the teacher. I've been like that teacher that's into like culturally responsive. That's what we were calling it back then. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been the culturally responsive teacher, the person that wants to go to that PD, that person that, you know, like my coworkers would like want me to like talk to their kids or, you know, I was kind of that teacher that they brought the kids to. But I also always had really, really good, I'm using air quotes, classroom management. Like from jump, I never had challenges with my students behaviorally. And that was kind of a good and a bad thing. And it was because I was reproducing a lot of like systems of harm, especially as a woman of color, as a Black woman that I had experienced. And I was using those in my classroom, but they worked. And I think that they worked because I identified my students and I also had a relationship with them. But I was right there with everybody else, like kicking kids out of class and doing all of these things that quote unquote worked. And I think in my own journey, the more I reflected on like, how am I doing something that's harming the same community that I come from? How am I perpetuating that? What's my role in that? Then I really started to realize like, okay, we need to do something different. And then you had this influx of awareness in 2020, especially with the, you know, criminal injustice system and the school to prison nexus. And you had scholars like Dr. Bettina Love and David Stovall really blowing the top on all of this. So on the one hand, like I'm in the classroom, and on the other hand, I'm like deeply steeped in this abolitionist work. And a lot of this was centered in LA, mind you. So y'all, I was in the streets, like on my Instagram, like I was posting every day from the protests, like I was out there. So I saw that people were kind of missing a connection. Cause to me, I was like, when I look at what's going on, I see a clear connection to the way that we handle behavior in classrooms. Like that was clear as day to me that the kids that are getting kicked out, the kids that are getting suspended, the kids that are getting expelled are the kids that end up in these other like racist systems, right?
Right.
And so to me, I was like, why are people not crossing this enough? Why aren't people connecting this enough? And then there were a lot of education scholars who were talking about equity work. And they did great things like getting representation into classrooms, making people realize that we needed more Black and brown teachers, understanding like how school funding works. But like it wasn't making it to the behavior management space. And I was kind of like, and even that word behavior management, in the book I talk about, that's what we understand it is. So that's what I'm going to call it. But that's not what I think about it is.
Yeah.
So it wasn't connecting to behavior. It was like picture books with Black people. And I love it. And like, we're going to do Juneteenth and like, we're going to turn up for Latin heritage. But I was like, but we're still kicking kids out of the class. We're still isolating them. We're still using these dehumanizing practices. And so when I saw that those things were intersecting, like that social justice awareness, that like push for equity, it wasn't making it to like classroom culture. And I waited to see if anybody was going to like talk about it and nobody had seen it. So I was like, okay, like sweet, I guess it's my job then. And so I was able to, you know, use my doctoral program and use my work and my background. And I did a lot of, the books, I read a lot of these books behind me in preparation for making this book, because I just saw it as such a gap. And then I knew that the missing ingredient was joy. Because the way we talk about behavior management is so punitive, so carceral. Mm-hmm. And I had, I share the story in the book. I just started reflecting about how, because I worked with kinder and high school. So I coached kindergarten and then I worked at a high school. And I've seen just like the way that these kids change. Like kindergartners are excited. They love their teachers. They skip into class. They're obsessed with learning. And then by the time, you know, they're in the fifth or sixth grade, they hate it. And I'm like, what are we doing to like, at some point it's us, right? We got to step back and reflect. So to me, it was like, we're missing joy. And a lot of that is coming from this negative approach to classroom management, behavior management. So it was kind of like the perfect storm of all of these things colliding that I was like, somebody needs to like help teachers navigate this in a practical way. Like not just talk about it, but teachers need to know like, okay, it's nice to say we want to have joyful classrooms, but what does that look like when we have kids that are in the middle of a mental health crisis? And what does that look like when you are like freaking out because you have 5 minutes to finish something or that's going to be on the state test? You know what I mean? So I wanted to make something that was really, really practical. So long story long, that's how all of this came out to be.
I mean, and I just think that it's so fascinating and people I'm sure will go, well, yeah, that's good. Of course you're the person to step up and do that. But I like what you were saying about, and then I waited and nobody said anything. So I said, oh, I guess it's me. Right. Like you just kind of go, well, I guess it's going to be me. And I mean, I know I appreciate that it's you because I love your work and I respect very much what you do. And I think that your experience with simultaneously kindergarten classrooms and that like sensibility, and then, you know, 16-year-olds and that sensibility. And like, I don't know about you, but I noticed that there's not that big of a difference between the kids and it is us. It is.
Right.
Yes, their life experience. Yes, all of these things. But like the difference between a 5-year-old and a 15-year-old is sure years, but really just wider vocabulary and some hormones. Yep. Like they're still kids. They still like to play games, like those big kids. And Amanda and I talk about it here on the podcast all the time, because that's our bread and butter, is 9 through 12, those grades. But then we also both have little kids, as you know. So there's not that big of a difference between kids, and there's not that big of a difference between kids and adults. I like to have fun and be joyful at school. So why wouldn't the children like to have fun and be joyful at school? It makes everything better.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it does. It almost makes too much sense. It makes too much sense. It's too good. So therefore, education can't possibly do it. But yes, we can, because you're telling us how.
Yeah. And I hope to really start the conversation. Like, I'm not trying to position myself as the end all be all, but I definitely want to start the conversation and hope more people will start to conceptualize and think about this, because it's also, to me, a much needed, like, when I talk to teachers, I'm like, don't you miss, like, feeling happy at your job? Like, remember when we used to like coming to school? Like, that's, the joy can do that. It makes your life easier too. So I'm trying to like help teachers out as well, because I know that they're frustrated and burnt out too. So it's a win-win-win.
I don't know what you mean. I think we all went into teaching for the fame and money.
Right.
Mostly for the fame and mostly for the money. Yeah.
Mostly.
Still waiting on the money, but yeah.
Kind of like, that takes us right into the next question we were really curious about, because you've said it a couple of times that, you know, this book is definitely for teachers. Is this book for anyone else? You know, is it when you were sitting and you're picturing the person or the people picking up this book, who is Rooted in Joy for?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely, my primary audience was teachers, but I think, and I say this in the book, this work, it's ridiculous to think that one teacher in one classroom is going to turn a school culture. And that's what I faced over and over again, is teachers will be like, I want to do this, but this isn't happening. Or especially single subject teachers, where you're sharing kids with up to like six other adults. So it's really challenging. So I think it's really helpful when administrators and other stakeholders tap into this work. A lot of the mindset shifts are just talking about things like systemic racism, kids, joy, you know, restorative practices, humanizing practices. All of that, I think, is really helpful for families, for caregivers, anybody that has interface with children in any type of role. And I include, you know, people that like work at the district, because it's really a mindset shift that is so critical, but that has to happen. Because the problem is, like, as much as I think, and I really talk about teachers having agency in their own rooms, and I think that there are things that you can do, even in the most toxic of environments. Mm-hmm. But what's also true is we are responding to a lot of outside pressure. So I really see this as a book that seeks to just slightly shift the imagination to freedom dream a little bit, to reimagine a little bit what classrooms and like education can look like. And I think that that's the work of everybody. So while teachers will hopefully feel like a lot of the tools and a lot of the strategies are specifically directed for teachers in the classroom, I think it's helpful for everyone to reconceptualize, like, what if classrooms were like joyful spaces? Like, what if that was like not just like a means, but what if that was the end? Like, what if it was like, yeah, we want to be joyful at school?
Well, and I think I really appreciate, as a classroom teacher who just finished school last week, and I'm feeling it, like, I really do. And I have a very supportive administration. I know a lot of people at our district office, like, and I know there are other teachers like me out there who are like, yes, I think that my supervisors and my other supports want to do just that, actively support our classroom efforts. And they always say, how can I help you? And I go, I have no effing idea, because I'm so in it right now. But maybe if we all read the same thing and we look at something that has practical strategies for a teacher, but an associate superintendent is reading those strategies for a teacher and understanding then what their role is in supporting that classroom teacher and those schools, that seems a lot more productive to me than, here you go, teachers, this is going to really help you. And it's the you teachers versus how can we all help students?
Right. Exactly. Because the people that are, I mean, at the end of the day too, a lot of other stakeholders are determining the criteria for success. And that's what I say, like, joy is the end, because like there has to be a shift. Like, we have to rethink about, like, what is our expectation of a six-year-old? Is it Are you evaluated on if you're a good teacher or not if your six-year-old sits still for 6 hours? I mean, that's the question we have to grapple with. That's kind of out of teachers' hands. But this is, and I talk about this in the book, when I would get evaluations, my evaluations for classroom management would be good, but then I would think, like, am I that good? Yeah, or like, are why? They just afraid of me? Like, are they just like doing what I say? Or am I building, like, am I making them feel good about themselves? Are they like happy and joyful? Or do they just like do what I say because they're afraid I'm going to do something? So that's why it's those other stakeholders that need to be involved, because some teachers are going to read this and be like, well, if I don't have my kids, you know, sitting in SLANT, you know, that acronym or whatever, or if I'm not doing all, that's how I get like graded essentially. So it's really important that this is a bigger conversation.
Absolutely.
We talked about that back in August, I think, too, because it's the same with the consulting work, right? Like a school can drop you in for a one-day PD, and that's totally different from a whole school approach to transforming. So I think that that's, you know, we're doing the work, right? You're putting the book out into the world. You're doing the consulting, but it has to be this kind of community effort support one another. I think, Marie, you painted the perfect picture of that. But I think, you know, that aside, you know, what would you say, Deanna, like an experience with this book looks like? So what are some things teachers could do even before reading it? Or like, is there preparation, whether that's like mental or even like experience-wise, that would benefit teachers before picking it up? And then how might they progress through your work and the way the book is laid out and kind of how that works in the
like, how is it the guidance, basically, for the progress?
Yeah. I am such a huge believer in the power of, like, reflection. So I would say, like, starting with reflection is critical. And for most people reading the book, I'll speak for myself, but I know a lot of people of my generation and older, we just experience school in a different way than what we are actually expecting of kids right now. Like when I think about what like the stakes were when I was in kindergarten versus what a kindergartner is going through right now, when I think about, you know, the culture of like bell to bell, rigor, 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 like that really wasn't a thing that I experienced as much as a student. So honestly, where I started was reflecting on like, well, what was it like for me? Like, did I because I loved school and I had good teachers. I had teachers that didn't understand that I was Black, but I had good, you know, technically good teachers. So starting with that reflection, another thing that I encourage people to reflect on is like, especially when you're thinking about behavior, what does it mean to be respectful to you? Mm-hmm. Like, what are your expectations of children in a setting? Do you expect kids to, you know, kind of be seen and not heard? Like, how much discussion do you expect your students to have? What does it mean to you to like be listening? What does listening look like? Like, how do you know that I'm listening to you? How would you know that anybody's listening to you? What, all of these little things you think are kind of no-brainers, but they're really, really nuanced. And that's what I experience the most with teachers is as we start to unpack this work of like examining our biases, of examining how white supremacy culture shows up in our classrooms, and examining how our own perspectives are influencing our classrooms, we see it more clearly where we see like, oh, this is a me thing. And this might not be just on this student. And it really helps you to, I think it helps defrustrate it, right? Because it kind of like makes you like frazzled, like, why are you doing these things? Like, oh, you're doing these things because we don't have a pool of shared meaning on what it means to be disrespectful. So you're not meaning to be disrespectful. We're just not speaking the same language. We're not right here. Mm-hmm. So starting with those reflections, starting with just unpacking your own experience, I invite teachers to reflect on their triggers. Like, what are those behaviors that really just get you? Like some teachers, it'll be talking out of turn. Some teachers, it'll be like taking another kid's supplies. Some teachers, it'll be coming to your class unprepared. But everybody has that one behavior that just like sends them, like highly escalates them. That's something that you should think about. It's just important to know, like, what are the things that really get under your skin? So those are the types of slow down, reflect, think about it. The questions that we just don't have time to do in the day. But in that moment, when you're frustrated, when you're tired, when it's the last class of the day and it's, you know, the week before spring break, that's the time when you're going to be, you know, the most like your emotions are going to be high, uh-huh. right? And you're going to be very agitated or dysregulated. And it's important to reflect on that now when we have the capacity and time so that we can show up differently in those moments. And so if I invite anybody to do anything before they read the book or over the summer, or even as they're reading the book, just like stop and process, stop and think about like, okay, how do I see that in my classroom? Where do I see that in myself? Like, what about my childhood? Let's go back. How are you disciplined? Were did they wash your mouth out with soap? Were you, you know, not allowed to hang out with the family? Were you sent to your room and grounded? All of those things, like, we are not really thinking about how much that shows up, but it's really important to be in touch with that. And reflection is a skill. It's a capacity. So it might not come naturally to you at first. You might be like, this is weird. This is uncomfortable. But if you start with like 3 minutes a day of just journaling or reflecting or thinking about it or processing it, I'm an external processor, so I'd probably talk about it with somebody. You'll kind of build that capacity and you'll see that that helps you understand what's going on in the book, but also understand what's going on in your surroundings in general.
Well, and I think it even speaks to like just that practice of defining things, of finding meaning for things. It's the same thing that we do when we're coming up with a new, or not coming up, but when we're teaching a new concept. Like if you look at it from a curricular approach, what? I'm not going to stand up there with like these big concepts without defining them and finding a group understanding. Why wouldn't we do that with the things that are so weighty and have so much meaning, like respect, like disrespect, like, right? Like it just, but it's something we take for granted because we think to ourselves, yes. Well, respect is respect, but it's not. It's very cultural, it's very generational. I can tell you the thing that sends me through the roof is, and the damn headphone with their AirPods still in. Every time I come up, please take them out so that I know without a doubt you're listening to me. Well, they're not on. How would I know that?
Right.
How would I know that? Yes. So we define it.
Well, and I think, and Marie, you know, Deanna, Marie and I are nowhere near your level of expertise in this area, but I feel comforted in the reminder of the power of reflection, like before the triggers happen.
Yes.
You know, whenever we've ventured to talk about classroom management and classroom community on the podcast, in kind of our experience, I feel like for me, all of my solutions, which I'm saying in air quotes, have been figuring out what are the things that are going to not work and how can I think about that before reacting to it? Because I feel like so many of my issues that I ever had when they occurred, they were definitely because I reacted poorly in the situation, not because of the student. And that's something that's really hard to admit. And it's also work that I'm kind of glad we're talking about this in the summer. It's also kind of hard to do when you're in it, when you're in the thick of, you know, I have to lesson plan for tomorrow. This behavior thing is not going well, but like the lesson has to happen tomorrow. So you kind of put off the emotional behavioral stuff for another time. Yeah. And it is hard to exist in this world where you have to be able to do all of it. So I love that reminder of like, reflection doesn't have to be this thing where you're punishing yourself or you're, you know, putting things into a binary of good or bad. It's just figuring out where that trigger is and anticipating that it will happen again and coming up with common language and like just being prepared for it makes like a massive difference with very little actual time and energy. It's just a good reminder for me.
Yes. Yeah. And it's so important and so impactful for teachers to understand that like we are not neutral beings in these interactions. And I think that's the number one pitfall that I see is teachers really thinking like, well, I was just, baby, no, you were not. You were bringing all you were bringing 30 plus years of whatever you have going on also to that situation. And that's okay. It's just, it's not okay if you don't recognize it. Like, I need you to know that you are, and I had, this isn't in the book, but like one of the most important moments in my career, I was being observed by my mentor. So he didn't have a grading authority. So I was a little bit more, I wanted to show him like what really goes on. If you know what I'm saying, like he was evaluating me. So I was like, let's come in and see like what's really happening so I can get some advice. And I'm like this going back and forth with the student, right? And he's in the back and he makes a sign and holds it up. And it just says, you're making things worse. And I was like, oh my God. And I read that. I was like, I am. I'm escalating the student. I'm the problem. It's me. Like, I'm making things worse. And so I think it's so critical to like invite that reflection in and think about a really intense interaction you had with a student. And what were you bringing? How were you feeling? What were your emotions? What was coming up for you in that situation? All of these things are really small but powerful adjustments that pay off. They're hard to make tangible. They're hard to put on a checklist. So they can be a little slippery. But I guarantee you, you will feel, if anything, like maybe that doesn't mean that these things will never happen again, but you will feel better and they will feel better in that interaction. And that is hard to quantify, but it's important.
It also, just the practice, right? Over and over. Practice, doing it repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly. A, you'll get better at that reflection in the moment and anticipating things. But then also students like around you will start to learn that they don't have to have that high anxiety, because we're all going to have bad days. We're all human beings. It's always going to happen. But they're going to know that you're going to be an adult who might also have a bad day, but can admit and like stop and pause and think and be a person with that kid.
Yes.
And it's huge. It sounds so simple, but it really is hard to allow ourselves to be imperfect and human. Yeah. And then while also allowing our students to do so, like that modeling is so essential.
It's hard.
I feel like it maybe was you, Deanna, that when we talked about classroom community and like the component of vulnerability that needs to be in a classroom of caring, that we have to, if we expect kids to be vulnerable in speaking out about like really important, difficult topics, like we have to also not just academically be vulnerable, but in our behaviors and in the way that we, you know, cultivate our classrooms, that's a massive part. And like, it's slippery and it's not tangible. It's a very difficult thing to do, but the work is worth it. And it takes time.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it was so important for me to include care as a concept also in the title, in the subtitle, because I don't know if y'all have experienced this, but we've moved a lot of like the emotion out of teaching, which in a way makes sense, but we've become so like, I'm going to teach what I need to teach and I don't need to have a relationship with the kids. And I think it's a response to, I think, emotional overload from the pandemic and what we've all experienced. But I wanted to like make sure that people understand, like, I don't know how to tell you that you need to care for other people, but you do. Like, you have to care about, like, I'm so sorry, you have to care about your kids. Yeah. Well-being. And part of that is that vulnerability, like being able to say, like, put yourself out there. I care. I'm going to like walk on this journey with you. All of that is, it, in my opinion, it's kind of a non-negotiable. And I really want to encourage people to be okay with that and kind of maybe push back against this like cultural movement that we're in right now of like super like remove teachers, just like teaching the subjects and not investing in their kids emotionally or in any kind of relationship capacity.
Yeah, I don't want my kids to learn that way. I don't want to have that be my experience every day as a classroom teacher. I want to enjoy it. Like you said, I want to enjoy going to school every day. So
yeah,
let's do that. Okay. Well, Deanna, I feel like we could talk to you for days and days and days, especially when it comes to, I re-listened to our episode from last summer before we chatted. Like, I just listened to it a couple of days ago in preparation for today. And you remind me again of why I love being in a classroom and I love being around kids and I love being with other people's babies, which is a weird, it's a calling, right? This is a vocation, education. And I think that your particular view of the world and the world of education helps us to remember that, you know, we definitely make jokes about like, just remember your why, because it's like, yeah, my why is really going to help me when I'm knee deep in grading and I've got a kid, you know, doing this, that, and the other and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, knowing that there's somebody out there who is so well researched like you are and is so well experienced in different age levels and different schools that can still say, hey guys, we all do have a common why and it's rooted in joy, as like to quote your own title, it makes me go, okay, maybe me making fun of remember your why is not the only way to do it. Maybe it actually is something that we should do.
It's a annoying, but unfortunately it's true. But
it's true. It's all in the timing. And I think the person who brings it up. Yes. Yeah. It's all in the context, like 100%. So, okay. Before we close out this episode, and we are listeners going to be continuing with an extended episode over on Happy Hour. So if you're a member of Happy Hour, get excited. We have more coming right up. But before we close this one out, will you let our listeners know where they can find you and get a hold of you? We'll have it all in the show notes, but just in case they're driving, where can they find you?
Okay. So I recently have launched a YouTube channel, which I'm really enjoying. So you can find me at That's Just Good Teaching. And the title comes from Gloria Ladson Billings. Her first article about culturally relevant teaching was like, hey, it's just good teaching. Like, and so that's where the title comes from. That's Just Good Teaching with Deanna Smith. And also on Instagram, that's probably my main squeeze these days. So it's just at Deanna Smith on Instagram. And my book will be dropping in, when this airs, just a few short days. Yep. But if you're listening before the 8th, you can still get access to the free workshop if you pre-order. So it's available, you know, of course at Amazon, but also Barnes and Noble. You know, they got their teacher discount. So check out Barnes and Noble. And also I'll put some links as well for maybe small bookstores. So you'll be able to get it as well. So that's where I am.
Yay. Excellent. Cannot wait for everybody to get their hands on it. And I actually can't wait to, if any of my administrators are listening, spoiler alert, you're going to have a back to school gift from me.
Yes. Yes. I don't think it's shady at all to gift the gift to your principals. I think that is a power play. I say go for it.
Yeah, I'm all about it. Like, no shame. Let's do a book club, everybody. Okay. Yeah. Well, again, listeners, join us for the extended episode because we are going to keep picking her brain over on Happy Hour. But for now, thank you so much for joining us, everyone, and we will see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Brave New Teaching.
We'd love to keep the conversation going over on Instagram.
And while you're there, check out the links in our bio for the most up-to-date events going on in the Brave New Teaching community.
Thanks for being here and have a great week at school.